E2. Number 8A.
We take now the findings that Mr. Dawley got in going over this intertwining of those categories and put them now into one mold, so to say, into what afterwards he called matrix. You know that matrix, and that matrix has been printed on a little chart, and I think you all may have that little chart. You have it also in various books, like John Dawley's book on the pure science of Christian Science. You have it also in Peggy's book on the matrix, and also Peggy's book on John Dawley. So this matrix is printed all over the place, so to say. And I tried to show you how it came into being, because to show how it comes into being is mostly more interesting than just to show the final product, and you don't know how it came into being, and therefore don't know quite what it means. So here is that chart. Here is the matrix, and you can see what he did. He took those findings which we were elaborating yesterday and put it into a matrix form, so that in that matrix form you actually have in the first vertical column the word, namely the word order, but split up into the four different phases of how the word unfolds and develops as it goes through the process of Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And in this way, you can see how he arrived at these entries he made in the chart with the synonymous terms. You see, the word order is given by mind, spirit, soul. And then you always have an overlapping in order to take on what you have gained, taking on soul. Sometimes you take one or two synonymous terms from the preceding one, taking over. See, here you can see the nature of synonymous term, that synonymous term are always referring to the whole, and therefore are never absolutely separated from each other, as if they would have no common characteristic. They always overlap, and that makes them synonymous. So you get in where does the Christ, soul again, principle, life, and then when we come to the where does Christianity, again you have the overlapping, taking on what we have gained from life and show it as life and truth. Actually, sometimes I'm not quite sure if this should not be corrected and take principle, life, and truth, but these are minor things. Actually, there are indications in the textbook that perhaps it should be principle, life, and truth, but that doesn't really matter as long as you get the linking over from the preceding one, showing that what we do in Christianity, that we prove through principle, that life which is the true life. So sometimes I guess perhaps principle could be in it. I don't correct it, because John Dawley once said, don't ever change that matrix. He just loved that matrix as a pearl without price. And so he said, don't change that matrix. And so I'm not going to change it. I don't feel I have the authority to it. But I think I have the right to think it out by myself, because there is no honor in honoring John Dawley by just taking him by every word he said. There is honor in John Dawley if we trace his way of thinking and extrapolate it and let that way of thinking unfold, or everything would stop with John Dawley, which was the last thing he wanted, because his great war cry he had was always, let us go on and on and on and ever on. All right, just to see what that I take this thing in a way that I understand it and that it makes sense. You can see that in Christianity now we prove, or that the word order proves itself in a living way as showing forth the truth of everything. And then in the word as science, he takes on life and truth and shows that actually this is the acme of the Godhead, namely life, truth, and love, that with God all things are possible, the omnipotence of being. So this is the way we put, say, our findings which had yesterday together, and you can see that in this way we have a four-time-four formulation of a matrix. Now, we would come to a very delicate question, which would ask us, now, is this a matrix or is this not a matrix according to the requirements of what is called a matrix? We saw that the matrix would have to fulfill three factors, namely it would have to state the A, the capital A, the subject itself. It would have to state what is the I and what is the J. Now, Mr. Dolley only defined the I and the J. He never really defined the big A. He was never thinking of that. And he defined the I and the J actually as being equal, because he did not make a difference between the calculus as written here on the top horizontally as the I, and he put down as the J the same terms and just had a contemplation of the word Christ, Christianity, and science to itself. Word contemplating the whole calculus. Christ, the word vertically contemplating through word Christ, Christianity, through the calculus itself. Then the Christ contemplating through the four, through the calculus again. And he left it at that and never really made a differentiation between the I and the J. Naturally, we can see that this is legitimate, that very often you make a matrix where the I equals J. This is legitimate, that they do not need to be different in their value. And he left it at that because at that point nobody was ever thinking of anything else. And so you have to think back in order to have a just appreciation of John Dolley, to think back that at that time, as I said, starting round about 1943 until 45, and just a little correction in 49, it was a time where only really the big mathematicians, the specialized mathematicians, were thinking in terms of matrices. And only shortly after that time, when Professor Wiener introduced cybernetics and where people couldn't handle anymore a subject without a cybernetic model, and for the cybernetic model they had to use matrices. So in a way you can see that he was pioneering in a field and was applying, which was terrific, applying the mathematical representation to the science of being. And this is quite in accord to Mrs. Eddy, because you know that Mrs. Eddy tried to explain so many things in the science of being through the symbolization of mathematics. Already on the page 3 of the textbook, she speaks about spiritual mathematics. Then she speaks about the calculus and the divine infinite calculus. She speaks about the numerals of infinity and so on, using mathematical symbols to indicate the exactness and clarity of her teaching. So at his time, nobody was ever asking what is a I and what is a J and what is the A. And so he left it at that. And it is naturally the later generation that has to think it over and ask the big question, what is the I, what is the J, and what is the matrix all about? At his time, nobody was thinking of any other matrices than just the matrix. And so the error crept in that we just talked about the matrix, as if there would be no other matrices, and we considered, therefore, this matrix as the only possible matrix there is for representing a subject in Christian Science. It is actually only after he left us and right afterwards that various students of his suddenly were pushed to see that there must be other matrices. So that actually a matrix is an infinite way of representing a idea in or an aspect in the divine science, so that to give, instead of an answer through a definition, to give an answer through a matrix form. And as you know, since then we have seen many, many matrices. Actually, we could say, right at the beginning, we could say, now, what kind of matrices would we have to find? We would have to find a matrix about every fundamental category of being. So we would have to find not only a matrix on the synonymous terms, we would have to find seven matrices on the seven synonymous term, namely a mind matrix, a spirit matrix, a soul matrix, a principle matrix, a life matrix, and the truth matrix, and the love matrix. I don't know if perhaps next week when we do some kind of text interpretation, if we will have time, and if it's right, to introduce how to build up such a synonym matrix. I have been doing that during the last 2 years, and it is a very big job to do, time-wise, energy-wise, first of all, and it needs an enormous lot of spiritual sense, and it's an enormous lot of scientific sense, and an enormous lot of being able to listen in an absolutely new way to the text. Actually, it needs a very clear understanding of the principle of text interpretation. And in that way, one can build up these seven matrices, which then again you can put together into the seven matrices as one matrix, the synonym matrix per se. Or we could go to the next category of being, like Word, Christ, Christianity and science, and see that each one of them should be presented through a matrix, that there would be a Word matrix, a Christ matrix, a Christianity matrix, a science or Christian Science matrix, so that we would have these matrices. We could see that there are many other matrices possible. Namely, and that's one thing that will crystallize out of the synonym matrices, namely that wonderful calculus of a matrix that is showing the interaction of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science as the J, as the I, and the seven synonymous terms as the J. That's a terrific thing, because that really gives us a very workable and practical knowledge of how each synonymous term operates through the four, fundamentally. And you can see that a research in that line would give us a very good foundation for practice, because then thinking in terms of mind, spirit, and soul, and principle, and life, and seeing them operative as were Christ, Christianity, and science, naturally must be a terrific spiritual power, conscious power. You can have other matrices where we intertwine, for instance, the four sides of the Holy City, Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, with the levels, with divine science, with absolute Christian science, and Christian science, so as to give a matrix of that interaction between the four sides and the three levels. You can't do it with science itself, because science is, by definition, not the fourfold calculus, but science itself is, by definition, the infinite one. And so you can't make a matrix of something which does not exist. And this is a very big point, what I just said. We can't make a matrix of something that does not exist. That is not possible. Because I say that, because I begin to see all over the country, and also in this country very much so, that one begins to play with the term matrix. Just to have fun with the matrix, and just take any old terms and try to put them into relationship with some other terms. Well, that is playing with it. What we must see that we are really pure in our concept and stick to that definition, namely that only categories that are consistent within themselves can be used as an I or a J to build up a matrix. If we take a category which is not consistent within itself, you can't do that. What does it mean, a category which is consistent within itself? A category which is consistent in itself is, for instance, that if you take a synonym category, then in that category only synonymous terms can appear, and not anything else. Or if you take a category that is consistent within itself, is the calculus, where you only can take Word, Christ, Christianity, and science in it. So you cannot mix up in the I or in the J, say the I mix up the synonyms with the calculus, or things like that. That doesn't work. That's not according to the definition of matrix. You will see as we go on through the week, and at the end of the week we turn back to those definitions which we have been considering right at the beginning, that we begin to see the bigness of these simple definitions. That's why I say stay simple, stay with the categories. Yes, so here we have the matrix of John Dorley, and we can see that he left it at the point where he just has found it, and we must recognize that it was a terrific contribution. What that matrix is about, the A, he has not said, he has not told us, and after him nobody has asked that question. And so nobody answered that question. Except I have asked myself over and over and over and over, what is the A of that matrix? Because it must have an A. Because if you take, for instance, the seven synonymous terms and make a matrix of the seven times seven, you also have a matrix, and it's certainly something else than John Dorley's matrix. It has another A. And in order to define this matrix, naturally we should be able to define it. And I'm very hesitant to define it. And so don't expect from me to give you a definite answer. It is quite all right that I present the subject which I do not know completely. Everyone does that. Every professor does that. Every professor at the highest university of the highest excellency sometimes presents a subject of which he can truly say, actually, I don't know exactly or 100% what it is, but I know about 90% or 80%. And that's workable. That is, in a science, legitimate. We do not need to think that it is not legitimate to present a subject which we do not yet know 100%. Especially the newest line in thinking in the philosophy of science, if you take like Karl Popper as one of the outstanding philosopher that comes to the front, he is even called the Einstein of philosophy today, he brings that out very, very neatly, that he says, for a science, especially for a workable science, it is very often much better to have an incomplete theory that works than to wait until the theory is 100% and wait and it doesn't work until then. So it is legitimate if I say, here we have a matrix of greatest importance, a matrix that we can actually even use and practice with it. It's a terrific practical matrix, and yet be hesitant in defining it what it is. So I would leave it at that point, at this moment, because this class is taped. And when it is taped, these tapes usually last for many years. And I don't know how the idea will reveal itself and crystallize. I only know that it will. And therefore, I have a kind of responsibility in conveying something to the universe, so to say, and not be quite 100% clear about it, and then still say, this is so-and-so. And this would be a too great a responsibility which I don't want to take. In a science, especially as we look at it in modern times, which differentiates itself very much from a religious truth, namely, a religious truth is always a dogma where one says it is so and so and not otherwise, and this is the way that it will always be. That's a religious way of stating a truth. The truth in a science is different. It always begins somehow with a statement and with an initial statement of which one thinks it is more or less right and begins to work with it. And as one works with it, one always comes, so to say, to a situation where it can be tested and where it can be tried if this statement is right or wrong, what they call then the trial solution, and where one finds then suddenly that something is not quite right, that it is not quite right. And that is the most productive point, at that point where one finds out that there is something not quite to the point. One is awoke. Oh, I always have difficulty with awaken and awoken, and I don't know. One is awakened to the fact that one would have to investigate the proposition deeper. So through error exclusion, we get a feedback to the first proposition. And that's the way I have been working with all the matrices that we will contemplate this week, that all these matrices, the first time one began to see them, they were quite good, so to say, to a certain extent, but as time went on, 10 years, 20 years went over it, one naturally made progress, one began to see much more about structure and the structural sense, and one had to rectify at certain point certain statements, and this is the most beautiful thing one can do about one's own work, to rectify it. The religionists are those who say, what I have once written, that's that, and I stick to it through hell and high water, and even if I have to use all the dialectics in the world to prove it, that it is still right, this is not science. I like to think that whatever I have seen is moving forward and forward, and is being and lends itself to rectification, which what we will see this week. And so we have, so to say, a wonderful opportunity to take my own work and look at it in a critical way and criticize my own work, so that I don't have to criticize anybody's work but my own, and naturally this is much more agreeable than the other way around. Except here with John Dawley, he isn't anymore here, he can't give me the answer, what is really the A of his matrix. Naturally, every time I have said that in a class or in a lecture or anything, every time somebody would come up with the right answer. And I think you will excuse me that I don't listen to it. Because in order to give the right answer, one must know the fundamentals of a matrix. And so I prefer to listen and listen to the Divine Spirit to give me the answer. So if I would say, try to educate the class in scientific thinking, I would make the trial and speak about it in a hypothetical way, to try it out, to feel it out, to feel how far we can go and where the limits are for an answer, and leave it at that. But this is an enormous responsibility, because I know from the experience that it is forgotten then by the listener that this is now a trial solution that we are working on, and that is forgotten, and then it's taken as the and only solution, and then naturally the whole thing is wrong. So I trust now that you take it that way, though I know that I may just get into trouble with it. But I have been in trouble all through my life. I never had a month where I didn't get into trouble. I guess that's why I got somewhere. So let's go back and put no personal opinion into it, but just try, for instance, to see what the definition of a matrix demands of us to state. And instead of starting with the A, let's start with the I and J, which may give us an answer to what is the A. Did I put that right? So from this point, say, work again now inductively from John Dawley's findings,